Face the Nation, coming up next.
TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Yes, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states. In the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then, register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free, guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
I'm Bob Schieffer, and this is Face the Nation, breaking news overnight as both sides step up their attacks in the Mideast. Israeli troops move into Gaza on the ground to take out a rocket facility in what may be the opening stages of a wider war. It is day six of the Mideast conflict, and as the rocket attacks intensify and casualties mount in Gaza, neither side seems interested in a ceasefire. We'll talk with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and hear from the top Palestinian delegate to the United States and the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. Then we'll turn to the immigration crisis. As tens of thousands of children pour across our southern border, we'll talk with Texas Governor Rick Perry and House Democrat Luis Gutierrez. 60 years of news, because this is Face the Nation. And good morning again. To get that news on the overnight developments, we go first to Holly Williams in Gaza City. Holly.
Good morning, Bob. Israeli commandos clashed with Palestinian militants on the coast here early this morning. It's the first gunfight since this escalation began, and it comes as Israel considers whether to mount a ground invasion. The Israeli military says four of its soldiers were lightly wounded as they attacked a site used to fire long-range rockets in what may be the first ground incursion of this conflict. The militants have launched hundreds of rockets into Israel over the last week. They've caused some damage and injuries, but so far, no Israelis have been killed. And that's thanks in large part to Israel's Iron Dome anti-missile defense system, which shoots those rockets down. Now, the Palestinians have no such protection, and Israel bombarded them again for a fifth night last night. One airstrike on the home of Gaza's police chief killed 18 people. The Israeli military says it's targeting sites used by militants. But Palestinian officials say more than 150 people have lost their lives, and they say that includes scores of civilians. The Israeli military dropped leaflets from the air in northern Gaza, warning residents to evacuate for their own safety. And today, hundreds of families have fled their homes and taken refuge in school buildings here in Gaza City. The Israeli military, meanwhile, has called up more than 30,000 reservists and has massed troops on the border, adding to fears of a ground invasion. And despite calls for a ceasefire from the UN Security Council, so far both sides have resisted international pressure to end the violence. Bob?
Holly Williams, thank you so much, Holly, and be careful. And we begin this morning with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Prime Minister, thank you so much for joining us. I understand as we begin this interview, Tel Aviv is again under an alert that the sirens have just gone off.
Well, the sirens went off because Hamas have fired rockets on Israel's major city. They're firing rockets at all our cities. I want your audience to imagine what it would be like if all the cities of the United States, I'm not just talking about New York and Washington, I'm talking about all the cities of the United States, from the East Coast to Colorado, 80% of your population would be in bomb shelters with a minute to a minute and a half red alert warning time to get into those shelters. That's what we're experiencing right now as we speak. So this is an unconscionable terrorist attack on civilian populations, and of course, we have to act to defend ourselves.
How many rockets have been fired so far, Prime Minister, from the Gaza?
Right now, over 400 rockets on Israel's cities. Maybe the number has increased to closer to 500. That is, many more rockets were actually fired, but those are the ones that made it into the space above our population center. So we're talking perhaps a larger number. But, you know, there are two things about this. One is the fact that this is a deliberate Hamas terrorist weapon. And with the exception of chemical weapons or nuclear weapons, it's the ultimate terror weapon. And any country would act to defend itself against this. We are doing exactly what any country would do, you would do, if you were targeted from across the border. You would try to pinpoint the rocketeers. That's what we're doing. Now we come into the other problem. See, the Hamas and the Islamic, the other terrorist groups like Islamic Jihad are firing from Gaza when their rocketeers and their command posts are embedded in homes, hospitals, next to kindergartens, mosques. And so we're trying to operate to target them surgically. But the difference between us is that we're using missile defense to protect our civilians, and they're using their civilians to protect their missiles. So naturally, they're responsible for all the civilian deaths that occur accidentally. We're sorry for any accidental civilian death, but it's the Hamas that bears complete responsibility for such civilian casualties.
Prime Minister, the UN Security Council, of course, called for a ceasefire yesterday by both sides. I take it that's not going to happen for a while as far as you're concerned.
Well, our goal is to achieve sustainable quiet and security for our people, and we're doing that by degrading Hamas and other terror capabilities. I'm not going to say right now how and when that goal will be achieved, whether by diplomatic and military means, but that goal has to be achieved. We need to have quiet restored to our people for a sustainable period of time and not just for 5 minutes.
Last night, Israeli forces on the ground went into Gaza to take out a rocket launching facility there. Is this a sign that this war is about to get wider, or are you going to go in force into Gaza with ground forces?
Well, we use whatever means are necessary to defend our people, as would the United States or any other government faced with such a predicament.
Prime Minister, how long do you think this is going to go on? I mean, I understand what you're saying here, but how will you know you've won?
I think the issue is achieving the mission, and we'll have to see how that is achieved. I was asked by someone, is this the beginning of the end? And I said, I don't know if it's the end of the beginning or the beginning of the end. We've just received now a quiet alert. As we were giving this interview, can you hear this through the... Can you hear this? No?
Yes.
Well, what you're hearing right now is the... That's the calm alert. In other words, when we began this interview, we were under bomb alert. And as the minutes passed, now we are being told that people can go out into the open air again. This is the kind of reality we're living in, Bob. And we'll do, as I said, whatever is necessary to put an end to this.
Do you think that this can never be solved militarily, Prime Minister? Isn't there going to have to be some kind of a negotiated settlement here, some sort of a diplomatic settlement? I'm not sure I know what that is, but where does this go from here?
Well, when you have something like Hamas, who talks about, they don't care about political settlements. They want to destroy the state of Israel. They're not even talking about building a Palestinian state. They want to establish some kind of their version of, you know, of the caliphates. They say they have to murder Jews wherever they find them worldwide. So these people are not into political settlements. But it doesn't mean that we cannot have the necessary action coupled with diplomatic backing to achieve the protection of the Israeli citizens from these rocket threats, tunnel threats, and so on. But again, I'm not going to get into the specifics of this. Sometimes you just have to fight against people who want to murder you, kill your
Prime Minister, do you think that the whole idea of a two-state solution is now dead? Is that just gone by the by?
Well, look, I think there are two separate issues, whether we can achieve a negotiated settlement with those Palestinians who are willing to coexist next to Israel is one question. But that doesn't fly in the face of the other need. In fact, I think it is complemented by the other need, that you've got to fight back and roll back the forces who are seeking to extinguish the Jewish state completely. We need to defeat those people, roll them back, or peace is not going to be possible. Because as far as Hamas is concerned, they couldn't care less if you come with a two-state solution, a three-state solution, or a four-state solution. They want a no-state solution, no Jewish state. And therefore, if you want to have peace, you have to fight these people, and you have to roll them back. Otherwise, there's no prospect for peace.
Let me talk to you a little bit about the negotiations going on now with Iran over these sanctions and so forth. The Iranian representative to those talks going on said on NBC this morning that there really was no reason for Iran to have a nuclear weapon. What's your response to that?
I think it's comical. Iran has invested an untold fortune, certainly over $100 billion, probably close to $200 billion, in building ICBMs, which are only used for nuclear weapons, in building underground nuclear facilities for nuclear weapons, in enrichment, uranium enrichment, and centrifuges that are only for nuclear weapons, in plutonium and heavy water that is only for nuclear weapons. If they wanted civilian nuclear energy, they wouldn't need any of that. 17 nations have civilian nuclear energy, and they don't have a single centrifuge. So Iran is lying. That's a straightforward lie. Second point is that I think that the capability to make these weapons is what's at issue right now. That's what's being negotiated as we speak in Vienna. And I think the crucial thing is not to trust Iran. I think nobody in his right mind would. And not to inspect Iran. That's secondary and largely immaterial. The crucial question is to deny Iran the capability to make the nuclear weapons that they seek. And that means taking the enriched nuclear material and the means to enrich it and to make a bomb, to take it out of Iran, just as it was done vis-a-vis the chemicals and the means to make chemical weapons out of Syria. That's the deal that should be done. Any other deal would be a bad deal, and it's much better to have no deal than a bad deal.
Prime Minister, thank you so much. We'll let you get back to work now and keep your head down.
Thank you.
We'll have a lot more on all of this later in the broadcast when we talk to the Palestinian representative to the United States and the Israeli ambassador to the U.S. But we want to turn now to the other major story we're covering today, that of the tens of thousands of Central American children crossing the border illegally into the United States. Texas Governor Rick Perry joins us now from Austin. Governor, thank you for coming. You have called the federal response to this crisis inept. Do you mean the president's inept, or is Congress inept too?
Well, I think there's plenty of blame to spread around from this perspective, but when you're the president of the United States, you are at the tip of the spear, so to speak, and whether it's a VA that's had scandals or whether it's the IRS, you're ultimately going to be responsible. And this border situation, and I go back to multiple years in the past of which we've drawn attention to this administration and the problems on the border. We've asked for 1,000 National Guard troops for over 4 years from this administration. As a matter of fact, in May of 2012, Bob, I gave the president a heads up on what was happening with these unaccompanied children, these alien children who were coming in on the tops of trains. And we laid out exactly what we felt was going to happen if we didn't address that. And now we're seeing that become reality with literally tens of thousands of these young children making this long or just very dangerous trip, being separated from their parents. And it could have been stopped years ago had the administration listened, had the administration been focused on the border with Texas. I just don't think there's the interest. I've got to take that as a I'm not interested. When we asked the president to come this last week, he made a decision not to come. They're just time after time you see a response from this administration that says, you know what, we're really not that interested in the southern border of the United States.
Well, let me ask you, what do you do with these children, Governor? Many of them, as you well know, were escaping drug cartels, we're told, human trafficking. Once they get here, aren't we going to have to find some way to help them? What can be done about this?
It is a problem of monumental humanitarian impact. And you have to go back to the source of what's going on here, I think. And this is like a triage, if you will. If you have a patient that is bleeding profusely, the first thing you have to do is stop the bleeding. And that's the reason we have been so adamant about securing the border. Very quickly, that message will be sent to those Central American countries that you cannot send your children up here. You cannot catch a train or a bus or be coyoted up here, as you will, to walk across the border, and you're freely going to be able to stay in the United States. That was the message for years and months from this administration. That's what they saw, and that was the message that went back.
Let me ask you about something else. You really ripped your fellow Republican Rand Paul in an op-ed in Saturday's Washington Post. You said, your words, "Obama's policies have certainly led us to this dangerous point in Iraq and Syria, but Paul's brand of isolationism, or whatever term he prefers, would compound the threat of terrorism even further." Well, he responded today. He said, "Unlike Governor Perry, I am opposed to sending American troops back into Iraq. I support continuing our assistance to the government of Iraq. I support using advanced technology to prevent ISIS from becoming a threat. I also want to stop sending U.S. and arms to Islamic rebels in Syria who are allied with ISIS," something Governor Perry doesn't even address. I asked Governor Perry, how many Americans should send their sons and daughters to die for a foreign country, a nation the Iraqis won't defend for themselves? He really takes exception to your criticism. What is your response to what he says?
Well, I agree with him that it is the failed policies of this administration that find ourselves in this really bad position that we're in today. Not unlike the failed policies on the border with Mexico and Texas that is causing this issue with all of these unaccompanied alien children that we're seeing flooding into the border. But back to that part of the world, we have allies there in the form of Israel and Jordan that expect us to stand with them, to help them. They are very nervous because they've seen this president talk about red lines that he was going to draw in the ground, and then those red lines mean nothing. I disagree with Senator Paul's representation of what America should be doing, and when you read his op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, he talks about basically what I consider to be isolationist policies, and America can no longer come back onto the continental United States and draw a red line around the shore of America and think that we're somehow or another not going to be impacted. We must engage and tactically, thoughtfully, using the assets that we have against ISIS to keep these individuals from being able to create an Islamic state in that part of the world that will put Jordan and put Israel's literal future in jeopardy. And we need to send clear messages and powerful messages. The idea that I'm for opening up the gates and sending multiple numbers of American troops back into harm's way, I bet is a bit of a stretch. As a veteran, as an individual who has deployed hundreds and thousands of U.S. National Guard, Texas National Guard troops to Iraq and Afghanistan over the course of the last decade, I understand as well as anyone the concept of putting our young people in harm's way. We need a strategy that is sound. We need a strategy that when we say we're going to do something, we do it, and our allies, again, can trust us, and our enemies fear us.
All right. Governor, I'm sorry we have to end it there. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Bob.
We'll be back in 1 minute to hear from a top Democrat on the immigration crisis.
TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Yes, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states. In the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then, register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free, guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
We're back now with Congressman Luis Gutierrez, whose district is in Chicago, O'Hare Airport, Midway Airport, kind of the northwest and
northwest,
the
southwest side.
Side of it. And we thank you for coming back to Washington to join us this morning. You just heard Rick Perry some really strong words about the president. He said basically he's just not interested in solving this problem on the border.
Well, Governor Perry's just wrong on that issue. Let's first deal. He kept repeating the border, the border, the border, and he wants to put more National Guardsmen. And if they put more National Guardsmen, the children wouldn't come. The children come, Bob, fleeing violence and torture, murder and rape. And so they're going to continue to come as long as those conditions exist, and we don't fix our broken immigration system. Let's just put in context what the governor just said. So at the height of George Bush's presidency in 2002, I'm sorry, not the height. During George Bush's presidency, 1,600,000 people apprehended crossing the border between Mexico and the United States. Today, it's under 400,000. But George Bush, average of about 200,000 people deported a year, average over his 8 years. Over 6 years of President Barack Obama, 400,000. Over 2 million deported already under his eight. So both at the border and both in terms of deportation, there has been enforcement. But here's the problem. We spend $18 billion a year on making sure that the federal government has immigration enforcement agents. That's more than the DEA, the ATF, and the FBI, and all other enforcement combined. But we still have a problem, right? So you can keep throwing money and talk about enforcement, 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 but you got to put money also into your judicial system, and you got to put money in a comprehensive program that deals with the issue. I want to make one last point to the governor. Look, these are children. I'm happy he didn't demonize the children. But there is a demonization that goes on. And all I say to the governor is, I wish you understood and accepted the law of the land, governor. And the law of the land in 2008, we adopted in the Congress of the United States an anti-trafficking law. But wait, it wasn't only in 2008 that we said protect the children. We said protect the children in 2002 when we created the Department of Homeland Security. Dick Armey, signed by President Bush, said we must treat children who arrive at our shores differently.
Let me just ask you about this, because I hear this from Democrats as well as Republicans. Some prominent Democrats have said, you know, if the president was going to Texas, he should have gone down to the border and should have taken a firsthand look at this. Do you think he would have been better off if he had done that?
I think the president should have gone down there, stated what the law is. In 2008, Bob, look, Louie Gohmert from Texas, who hasn't ever seen an immigrant that he hasn't thought was bringing disease to this country, and went on the House floor this week to compare the invasion of children to our incursion into Mexico to seek out Pancho Villa, to our reaching the beaches of Normandy. So they put it in these terms. But Steve King from Iowa, he always says they're criminals. He can never say immigrant and criminal without putting. They voted for the 2002 and 2008 law that say protect. So when there were calmer times, right, level-headed people thinking about the issue, we put the children's interests first. Remember bipartisanship? This wasn't a Democratic bill.
Well, let me
this
just ask Republican you this. Let's start with this. Okay, don't you have to secure the border, though, and take care of these children that are already here?
And
how do you do that?
Yeah, the border is secure. The fact is, the children are handing themselves over to the Border Patrol agents. And under our laws, they must be treated. So all I have come here to say is two things. America, there's American exceptionalism, right? I believe in it. Mm-hmm. And I say we are the strongest wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world, and children are coming to our borders, we should protect them. Now, I will say this, follow the law. And the law said that we must put the children's interests first, which is what President Barack Obama is doing. I find Governor Perry interesting in that Republicans keep saying, well, we can't fix the immigration issue because we don't trust the president to enforce the law. And then when the president actually follows the law in 2002 and 2008, the very law that Republicans that was signed by President Bush, they say, well, he should do something different.
All right. Well, Congressman, we have to stop there.
Thank you
so much for joining us, and we'll be back.
TrueCar.com is changing car buying forever. Yes, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Some features not available in all states. In the first 3 months of this year, over 126,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. TrueCar users save an average of $3,078 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com and find out what other people paid for the car you're looking for. Then, register at TrueCar.com to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your TrueCar savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Remember, every day, TrueCar users receive negotiation-free, guaranteed savings. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
Welcome back to Face the Nation. We're going to turn now to the Palestinian ambassador to the United States, Man Rashid Arakat. He is the chief representative of the Palestinians here. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You heard what Prime Minister Netanyahu said this morning. He said, look, as long as they keep firing rockets, we're going to retaliate, and no country could expect us to do less.
No country would expect anybody to do that, but Prime Minister Netanyahu forgets the fact that Gaza is still under military occupation. He forgets the fact that the Palestinian people are still under his military occupation, and therefore he cannot compare the situation there to any situation around the world. I think the root cause of all the violence that we have witnessed over the last 48 years since Israel occupied the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem in 1967 is due to the continued Israeli military occupation.
Well, having said that, and I understand what you're saying here, the fact is rockets were coming out of the Gaza. And what was it he said, 400, 500 of them coming out of there? They have to take action to protect their people when that kind of an assault is going on.
Well, I think our objective right now is to reach an immediate ceasefire, return to the 2012 understandings between Hamas and Israel. You have to also to remember, so far Israel have carried out 1,300 airstrikes against the Gaza Strip, dropped more than 1,000 tons of explosive on the most densely populated area on the face of Earth. 170 Palestinians have been killed so far, 1,200 wounded, and including destruction of more than 1,500 homes, hospitals, mosques, schools were targeted. You cannot target a building, even though if you suspected that a militant is there. According to Amnesty International, that's a war crime.
But, Ambassador, there were weapons being hidden in mosques. These things just go on. I mean, they are putting these weapons and things in civilian homes. And the Israelis say, look, we're even, you know, calling them on the phone and say, get out of there.
Yeah, calling, you know, I mean, they've done that in the beginning. Now, according to civilians in Gaza whom we spoke to, they no longer warn people. Yesterday, in an attack on a building to take out supposedly, allegedly, one militant, they killed 18 people in the process. Tell me what law, what international law allows a country, a superiorly military country, to target a civilian population in order to take out targets. Gaza is very densely populated. Now, there may be instances that there has been rockets fired from within buildings, but does this justify that you kill 170 people and wound 12 in less than a week? I don't think so.
You know, I was recently in Israel. I went down to the border with Gaza. The Palestinians there kept telling me that the reason that Hamas wanted to form this new alliance with your organization, they said, you know, Hamas is very weak, and that's the reason for this alliance. Well, it looks like Hamas is running the show. It looks like they're driving the boat right now, not your organization.
Well, I think that the purpose of that reconciliation effort by the PLO was to bring Hamas into the fold of the PLO. When we were divided, Israel kept saying, who should we talk to? The leaders in Ramallah, West Bank, or the ones in Gaza? Now that we are trying to unite our ranks so that whenever there are political negotiations with Israel, we can reach an agreement with Israel once and for all to end the conflict, the Israelis are saying we cannot talk to a united Palestinian front. So we are confused here. I think Hamas has been practical in its political positions in recent years. I don't think Hamas is seeking a confrontation with Israel. You have to keep in mind that the confrontation did not start with the kidnapping of these three teenage settlers on June 12th. Ever since the negotiations between the United States and Israel started in July of 2013 until June of 2014, 66 Palestinians were killed by the Israeli army. And that tells you that there is a problem there.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that President Abbas, who's the president of the Palestinian Authority, does he still have any influence at all over Hamas?
Well, I think he is exerting his best. I think he is talking to Hamas political leaders. He's talking to different parties in the region. He's talking with the United States, with Europe, with Arab countries. President Abbas' main objective right now is to stop the carnage in the Gaza Strip, to stop the bleeding in the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian innocent civilians, children or women, are paying the price for this massive Israeli airstrikes.
What would you like to see happen right now?
I would like to see an immediate ceasefire, an engagement, and then moving to deal with the root cause of the issue, which is ending the Israeli military occupation of the Palestinian people.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you for giving us your side. We will be back and talk to the U.S., the ambassador from Israel to the United States in just a minute. So stay with us. We're back now with the Israeli ambassador to the United States, Ron Dermer. Ambassador, thank you for coming. This technology is just amazing now, and I want to ask you about what we just heard from the Palestinian. But I think this war really came home to a lot of Americans this morning. While I was interviewing the prime minister, the air raid sirens went off over Tel Aviv, and then before the interview was over, we heard the people in the background telling people they could come out from the shelters. You actually, on your iPhone,
right,
get a report whenever those sirens go off. In fact, the siren goes off on your phone. What was that rocket? Because your phone tells you where that rocket came from.
Well, when you were interviewing the prime minister, a rocket was fired from Gaza into Haifa, and it was intercepted, I believe, over Tel Aviv. And it's not just the Israel's ambassador can get it on their phone. Anyone can get it on their phone. They can download an app called Red Alert Israel. And what happens is every time a siren goes off in an Israeli city when an incoming rocket is coming in, you'll get it on your phone and you'll know exactly what city is being targeted and when it's being targeted. And you just saw a real-time example when you were interviewing the prime minister.
What are your people brought in with you this morning? Some videotape, again, that came off the phone. And this was when the Israelis were going to attack a target in Gaza. I want to play this and then we'll talk about it. Well, there you have it. And this was the pilot being told there are children there or something. Well, you talk
exactly. And this happens all the time. When our pilots are targeting a particular site, they try to make sure that it's clear of civilians. There are many, many military operations that are called off because we see that there are civilians who are going to come into harm's way. And that's the difference between us and Hamas. Hamas is deliberately targeting our civilians. They want to kill as many civilians in Israel as possible. Thankfully, we have Iron Dome that are protecting our civilians. But as the prime minister said, they are actually using their civilians as human shields. They place missile batteries next to mosques, schools, hospitals. It makes it very difficult for our military to fight this war in a surgical way, but we'll do it and we'll continue to uphold the highest standards.
Well, you heard the Palestinian representative saying and giving a very different take on that.
Well, he has to brush up on the rules of war because apparently he doesn't know them. When you take a home or you take a mosque or you take any such a site and you turn it into a site where there is terrorist activities, it actually becomes a legitimate target. And that's what Hamas has done. They have taken hospitals, schools, mosques, homes, and they've turned them into legitimate targets. We haven't targeted many of them because what we're trying to do is surgically get at the missile batteries, and I think we do a pretty good job of doing it. We've had, huh? Now, well, we just had, this is the siren that goes off on my phone. A rocket now is heading, as we speak, to Gedera. That's actually the city, the village that my mother was born in. Right now, it is heading towards Gedera as we speak. And despite that, the fact that we have three quarters of our population right now who have to go into bomb shelters, the equivalent of almost of over 200 million Americans, Israel is acting with unbelievable restraint. Imagine what the United States government and the United States military would do if 200 million Americans were in bomb shelters and you were facing attacks from contiguous territory of a terror organization. I think we can be very proud of how Israel is fighting this war against terrorism.
How long does this go on, Ambassador? Where does this end?
Well, it ends when we are able to achieve our military objective, which is to restore a sustained period of quiet for the people of Israel. The people of Israel deserve that, just as any nation deserves it. And hopefully we can fight against the terrorists, and ultimately we'll have to go into some sort of political process to advance a sustainable peace. But have to understand one thing, Bob. This has nothing to do with the occupation. The Palestinian ambassador sat in this chair right before I got on, and he said the root cause of the problem is the occupation. But that those talking points are 9 years old. Israel left Gaza. We withdrew all our settlements from Gaza. We withdrew all our military forces from Gaza. And since that time, we've had 9,000 rockets fired at Israel. It's unacceptable. We have to defend ourselves.
Ambassador, I want to thank you for coming by this morning. And let's hope that siren doesn't go off too many more times before some solution can be found to this. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back with our panel of analysts in a minute. Well, we're back now for some analysis. Former Democratic Congresswoman Jane Harman is now with the Wilson Center here in Washington. Danielle Pletka is Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute, also joined by Nia Malika Henderson of the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal Washington Bureau Chief Gerald Seib. Well, boy, I tell you, we're seeing this thing in real time. I mean, here I'm interviewing the Prime Minister of Israel. His alert goes off in Tel Aviv, and then the U.S., the Israeli ambassador to the United States comes in. His siren goes off on his phone. This technology is just amazing. There's a rocket being fired at the very village where his mother is. I mean, it's just this whole thing. Jane, what's going to happen here?
I don't know, Bob. I think it's a tragedy all around. And just imagine what would be happening to Israel right now if she didn't have the Iron Dome system. And pieces of that were cost-shared and actually financed and developed by U.S. technology and supported by Congress on a bipartisan basis when that happened. And so 95% of these rockets are ineffective against Israel. But I think the next steps, my sense of Bibi Netanyahu, whom you just interviewed, is he's being prudent. I think it's underestimated how prudent he's being. And they may have to go in with tanks. I guess they went in with one tank. As you said, Bob, underneath these homes are the rocket launchers. And we just heard that people are being asked by some of the Hamas leadership to stay in their homes so they become human shields. It's a catastrophe for the Gaza and Palestinian people and also for the Israeli people.
What is Hamas trying to do, Daniel?
I think that we need to understand that Hamas, which is the government in Gaza, is really not interested in the well-being, as Jane said, of the Palestinian people. They're using their people as human shields. And I would say that they have a partly political agenda. They have been doing badly politically. They had to join a unity government with Fatah, with the PLO. And it's been very hard for them. They haven't delivered anything on the ground for the Palestinian people, whether it's basic standard of living, education, prosperity. They've delivered nothing. So what are they doing? They're basically using attacks on Israel to re-up their popularity in the region, to re-up their popularity with extremists. And I think this has not been talked about enough, They are doing the bidding of the country of Iran. Let's not forget that Hamas is underwritten, financed, armed, and supported in every way. Without Iran, Hamas would not be able to do any of this.
What is Prime Minister Netanyahu's strategy, as you understand it?
Well, I think one of the interesting things about this is that, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu is actually being outflanked on the right by people in his own cabinet. He's actually under pressure to go further, farther, faster than he's doing right now, which is not the position Americans are accustomed to seeing Prime Minister Netanyahu in. So that's the first thing. I was struck really, Bob, by what he said his goal is here, which is sustainable quiet, was the phrase that he used. Now, I understand that's the goal, but if you think about it, that's a remarkably modest goal here. Nobody's talking about peace. Nobody's talking about a solution. Sustainable quiet is the best the situation can offer right now. He said it, and his Ambassador Dermer used the same phrase. So I think that's, you have to take him at his word. That's the best he can hope for right now.
And, I mean, it's quite a departure from where we were many months ago when John Kerry talked about a path to peace, a months-long, you know, sort of negotiation around path to peace. And it looks like, I think, we have to figure out how Abbas comes out of all of this. He had been sort of the moderating voice in all of this. But as you said, it looks like he is being outflanked by Hamas. You have the president, obviously, President Obama calling for a ceasefire here, and Netanyahu essentially lowering the stakes here and saying the most we can hope for is quiet.
Well, does this have anything to do with the fact that the peace talks between the two sides broke down?
I don't think it does. I mean, I think that was happening anyway. I do think that's a problem, though, because one of the things that happens in this situation is there is no dialogue underway. There's no process. Even a faltering Palestinian-Israeli peace process at least allows you a channel for conversations, and that broke down several weeks ago. And so I think it takes away one of the shock absorbers that might be useful at a time like this. It's just not there. There's no conversation underway, and there's no place to have that conversation.
Is there anything the United States... Well, go ahead, Daniel.
No, I mean, I disagree with you, Jerry. I think that a big part of the problem here was that fake peace process. It was the, I hate to say it in such harsh terms, but the vanity of John Kerry in pushing forward a peace process without having done the spade work necessary. Because, okay, let's not even talk about the Israelis. It made Abbas look so bad. It undermined his credibility with the Palestinian people. It made him look weak and incompetent. He already looked weak and incompetent. But worse still, for the United States, if you want the U.S. to come in and help broker a ceasefire between Hamas and the Israelis, guess what? We have much less leverage because we shot ourselves.
I couldn't disagree more there. Kerry had 30 years' experience in the United States Senate, knew all the players, drank beer with Bibi Netanyahu in Cambridge 25 years ago, had credibility with the Palestinians, and bet the farm on a process that, yes, it was idealistic, but boy, did I think it was the right thing to do. And Abbas, among others, were at the UN General Assembly last September being very positive about it. So it's a tragedy that it collapsed. I don't think it was fake in any way. It was failed, but I think it was admirable.
And you thought the one-year time horizon that they laid out for peace, damn it, was a good
idea? Well, they didn't want it gamed against one side, gaming it against the other. And everybody knows how it comes out. They just don't know how to get there. And so I actually, I said once, John Kerry should be nominated for sainthood, which is tricky since he's partly Jewish. And the answer was, lots of our saints have been Jewish.
Well, I think John Kerry is the one who's mainly out for the sainthood for himself.
Okay.
This is the debate. I mean, there's a tragic sameness of the debate we've been having about this for many years. And I think for Obama, as he's going into the midterms, if you look at the way Americans sort of see his foreign policy, a very low mark, 60% disagree with the way he's approached foreign policy. So I think that's also, sort of in the background here as we discuss this.
If I could just add to that, we don't have a good narrative about what we're trying to achieve. The other side perceives it as don't do stupid stuff plus drones, and that's not persuading anybody. And that is urgent business, and I really think Obama has to address that.
You know, Jerry, I was struck by something just to switch to the other little problem that's going on right now. when Rick Perry said the president just doesn't appear interested, and I hear Democrats as well as Republicans criticizing him for not going down to the border, but Is this a broader problem for the president?
Well, there's a broader perception problem. I don't think it's necessarily the reality of the situation, but there is a kind of a sense of the president that he's a step removed and that he analyzes things in a sort of a clinical way from afar sometimes, but I'm not sure that's entirely fair. In this case, I think that, you know, his view of the visit to the border was, well, it's a photo op. I don't need a photo op. On the other hand, I think he'd have been better off to go and have that photo op.
I think so, too.
I don't think it would have been a photo op. I think the president of the United States showing up where we have a humanitarian catastrophe is critically important. He has sent the very able Homeland Secretary Jay Johnson down there 5 times, and there are some good suggestions for a fix. But this is a failure of several levels. One is it's a failure of Uruguay and Guatemala and Mexico to improve the lives for their people and stop these coyote transfers across Mexico and police their own borders. Two, it's a failure of comprehensive immigration reform. And we do need to have it in this country, including amending this, in my view. I disagree with Luis Gutierrez, but I think we probably need to amend this very well-intended anti-trafficking law to expedite the handling of these kids.
The problem for the president is that he made that crack, and it really was kind of a crack about photo ops, but then he went off and engaged in a whole series of other remarkably shallow and silly photo ops, which are humanizing for the president. But, of course, his job isn't to be humanized. His job is to deal with this challenge. But I think that part of this humanitarian crisis speaks to something that that is a longer-term criticism of the administration and of the president. This isn't a crisis that just happened.
This has
been building for some years. And we can all accuse Rick Perry of politicking, but the truth is he did write to the president in 2012. He did talk specifically about this. And, you know, I agree with Mr. Gutierrez when he says that we shouldn't say anything about the children. They are as much victims here as anyone else. But at the same time, we need to understand that the president's responsibility is to the American states and the American people, and he needs to address this up front urgently.
Well, what do you think? Do you think he will, Nia Malik?
Perhaps so. I think the White House, their main concern is sending the message to Central American parents and families to not send their kids to the border. And I think there was some concern that the president being there on the border might muddy that message. But eventually he may have to go down there. I think we'll probably hear more from Democrats pressing him to do that. We've got a big week ahead of us with this $3.7 billion package. Republicans balking at that sum, also saying that they don't think that sum of money will actually deter folks from actually coming to this country. So I think we've got a big debate ahead of us.
There's some good news. I've heard the numbers are going down slightly. Yeah. Just maybe the message is being received. And it should be a bipartisan message. These kids are not partisan, and they shouldn't be pawns in anybody's play.
All right. We're going to end it right there. Thank you all very much. And I'll be right back with some personal thoughts about selfies. So stay with us. As a father and a grandfather, I am familiar with the phrase, everybody does it. Having said that, I have to say this is dangerous. I'm not talking the usual texting while driving, talking with your mouth full, or the evils of super large sugary drinks. I'm talking about this, selfies. I know all the cool people do it. We saw that at the Oscars. Of course, it turned out they had a deal with the sponsors.
It's the Big Poppy selfie.
Red Sox slugger David Ortiz couldn't help himself when he got to the White House. He had to have a selfie. Turned out he had a sponsor, too. And now this. Spectators at the Tour de France were so overcome by the selfie urge, well, some of them got themselves run over. So I'm just going to say it. If you're going to a bike race or a car race or the running of the bulls, take a deep breath and just say no. Truth is, after all the static the tabloids gave President Obama, if you find yourself seated next to a glamorous world leader, you might want to think twice about a selfie moment. So to be on the safe side, satisfy the selfie urge only in the privacy of your own home or studio. Excuse me. That's it for us today. Thanks for watching Face the Nation. We'll see you next week.
This has been Face the Nation with CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Bob Schieffer. Today's guests were Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Ambassador Man Rashid Arafat, Ambassador Ron Dermer, Texas Governor Rick Perry, and Congressman Luis Gutierrez. The executive producer of Face the Nation is Mary Hager. The senior producer is Rob Hendon, and the producer is Emily Bradley. This broadcast was directed by Sue Ann Stockey-Wayne from CBS News in Washington. For more Face the Nation, we're online at facethenation.com. And you can follow Face the Nation, Bob Schieffer, and CBS Radio News on Twitter, Google Plus, and Facebook.
Buying a car can be a stressful experience, but TrueCar is changing car buying forever. That's right, TrueCar helps buyers get rid of the fear they might have to overpay. Last month alone, over 45,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and TrueCar.com users save an average of $3,046 off MSRP. With TrueCar Certified Dealers, you get negotiation-free guaranteed savings. Some features are not available in all states. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.